Hey there, this is Jake Thomas. This is the Dialogic Podcast. Thanks for tuning in. I'm going to go ahead and just go with the audio for a little while. Eventually, maybe I'll get some visuals in there for you guys, but I really want this to be something you can access and just listen to while you're working, while you're cleaning your room, while you are on the beach taking photos. However you like to listen to podcasts, but I really don't want it to be something where you sit down and watch me, although maybe in the future when I have guests, that will be something we'll do. I wanted to tell you a few things about the name. Dialogic is a term that comes to me from this literary theorist named Mikhail Bakhtin. And one of the things that he did in his study of literature was he looked at how within the dialogue between characters, there was embedded all of this information about that culture, about that author's attitude towards that culture. And it was through the way characters interacted that you could start to unravel what world they existed within. Now, obviously, it's going to be important for me to be in conversation with people. That's what's going to make it truly dialogic. Right now, I'm the only one speaking, so it is much more of a monologue. But the reason why I am doing this is so you can get to know me. I know that if you spend enough time with me, you are going to understand my unique perspective on the world. And you will either love me or hate me, most likely. Maybe you'll be indifferent, but I doubt it. And the thing is, when I listen to podcasts, I want to make this a podcast that I would want to listen to. And one of the big obstacles to podcasts is taking the time to get to know who the people are. And once you understand them, you understand their story, though, it can be a really cool thing to hear them interact with other people. But sometimes I think if you don't know the podcaster that well, and you don't know the guest, it's a little bit too much for you to try to take on. And only when you really are vibing with the host of the podcast, at that point you're willing to take a risk to hear them talk to someone who you have no idea who they are. Now, this podcast exists within the realm of podcasts, which is by now not an entirely new thing. And that is fine. I don't need to be the first. I've been wanting to do a podcast for a long time, and I've gone through quite a few different versions. First one I wanted to do was with a friend of mine who's a lawyer and a smart guy who loves art and literature and philosophy, but also knows a lot about law. And we tried to get something going, but it was hard for us to agree on style, and it was hard for us to get into a good flow when we were talking. And that's my fault as much as it is my friend's fault. And it's nobody's fault, really. It's just an attempt. And every time you attempt something new, you're bound to have some amount of failure. But that's just a part of the learning process. So I just want to thank my friend, who shall remain nameless at this point, for the attempt. And who knows, maybe he'll be a guest on here sometime soon. Anyways, I got a few podcasts under the belt with him, but we never released them because we couldn't quite agree on how we wanted them to be. Since then, I've tried podcasting with three other people, and all of them had something great to contribute to the team, but it was too difficult to create a consistent schedule without money. And I guess I just got a little bit frustrated with the process of trying to line up the times and then having something come up or fall through and then not being able to do the podcast. And I know it has to be super consistent. I'm an avid podcast listener. I'm a photographer by trade, a social media marketer. So I'm constantly searching for things to listen to while I edit. I also like to, for fun, I like to go down and photograph the surf. I like to photograph the waves. I photograph surfers. I photograph dogs playing in the water. And when I'm doing that, I like to have my headphones on and listen to something as well. I've always been hugely hungry for learning. That's why I did a PhD in literature. I was in school for a long time, up until 2011. I first started college in 1994 at Lewis and Clark College in Portland. After completing a bachelor's of fine art in painting, I moved down to San Diego just to live and work. And then I wanted to go back to school, so I got into a graduate program in literature at San Diego State. Maybe I'll tell you more about all that in a later podcast, but right now I'm just kind of sketching out the trajectory of my schooling to give you a sense that I've always seen school as something fun and positive, mainly because I just was interested. You know, I love learning. The life of the mind is a great life. And when you have the opportunity to engage with truly great thinkers and you feel that rush of an epiphany when you come across a thought that is entirely new to you, when you combine these different narratives, these different theories, and all of a sudden you have something new, something that you're proud to share, there's a rush. It's the same kind of rush that you get from making art. When you make something new, when you do something well, your brain rewards you. Creativity is, in a lot of ways, I think, one of the most powerful drugs. And as a result, it's also very addictive. I think people don't talk about that aspect of it so much. You know, it's almost as though we want to think that creativity is inherently a good thing. And so we dismiss the ideas that it could be very habit forming, that it could be bad for you. But that's what an artist does, you know, and that's part of why they do it, is the rush. It's a rush of endorphins. I'm not sure neurologically what's actually happening in the brain. Maybe at some point that would be a good podcast to have, to talk to somebody who understands neurologically what happens in the brain during the creative process. When you enter that state of flow where the choices you're making just seem to come to you and basically you're there responding to the ideas as they're unfolding within your consciousness. So once I finished my PhD, I was a bit exhausted due to the financial strain of graduate school. It's not easy financially in a town like Santa Cruz to make it as a graduate student. And I didn't really know what I was going to do, but I had luckily developed my voice as a photographer, and I had invested in some equipment. My background as a visual artist has always included photography since I was, in junior high. But I'd always used photography kind of as a secondary tool to painting or drawing. But when I was in graduate school, I took photography much more seriously and thinking about it and writing about it. And in fact, that was how I got into the PhD program, was by thinking about what I was calling at that time visual narratology and also visual literacy. And the idea was rather simple, although at that time it was controversial, because that was 2003, 2004. And that was before social media was anywhere near as megalithic as it is now. And my basic thesis was the digital age was going to radically revolutionize our culture, and the primary way it was going to do so was to bring visual language into the forefront more powerfully than it had ever been before. Now that people were able to take pictures and put them in a public space immediately, it was going to change the entire game of culture. Today, that seems like such an obvious statement. It's not only not controversial, it's banal. It's not interesting. It's obvious. Everyone knows it. But that's how much things have changed in just 13 years. Another example is I remember going to talk to my advisor. And I was doing an online magazine at that time. And I was talking to him about how the school could use digital media to tell a story of the university that would give them the ability to control the story they're telling, to shape the narrative, to give direction to the ship. And honestly, I was laughed out of the room. It was as though social media or digital media in general was so superficial that a serious university would never stoop to such a level. And now, there's not a university in the world that doesn't have digital presence, doesn't have a Facebook page, doesn't have an Instagram account. And that really gives me some confidence in my own ability to see what is coming next. And to know that when I see something that's coming next, the people who are supposed to be smarter than me, who have more power than me, who have more experience than me, are not necessarily going to be smarter than me. And while they may have certain intellectual faculties that they've developed or certain areas of study that they're expert in, and they can handily whip my ass and make me feel stupid, when it comes to this larger picture, it's not the case. And I'm humble because it's not my doing. I mean, anything that you can do that's a positive thing is really a gift. It's not something that you should be too proud of. nonetheless, you also have to be aware and observant to see when the structures of power are not based on meritocracy, but they're based on some old game that people are playing for backwards purposes. And that's when you want to get out of there. That's when you want to take your mind and put it to good use, where you know what you're doing is going to be received properly. You know, and it's like, it's sad because that's what the university is supposed to do. It's supposed to foster research and innovation. But honestly, it's one of the most backwards, old-fashioned places you could go. People are so insecure about standing behind anything that's new. It is as though the only good art and literature that has ever been made was made a long time ago. And that's because it's safe to say that Walt Whitman is a great American poet, and then to go into great depth about how he published The Leaves of Grass and what that looked like at the time. And, you know, there's all different angles you can approach within that topic. But nobody's going to say Walt Whitman isn't a great American poet. So it's incredibly safe and conservative. And this small-mindedness is the antithesis of what I believe a university should do. So I became disillusioned, and it also disaffected me. I no longer felt like going through the hoops and dealing with all of the politics of the university if the people who were esteemed as elders within that system were so scared intellectually that they couldn't stand behind an idea who only a decade later is so obvious. It's so clearly true. That to me is very disappointing. I expected more from my intellectual elders. And honestly, I really can't say that there were many professors who I respect today. And that's a sad thing, because these are supposed to be the people who represent us. These are supposed to be the people who can tell the story of our times the best, and they don't. Now, there are exceptions to that rule. I studied one quarter with Angela Davis, and she is fantastic. She is a powerhouse. She is a woman whose mind is so acutely attuned to what matters most that she doesn't fall victim to the same traps of peer review bullshit, which basically just means nobody can take a risk. Everybody's gotta play it safe. Everybody's gotta prove their pedigree. Norman Locke and Lewis Watts in the art department were two other professors, both photographers, who I did and do respect. Now, that basically, there's a few more, but honestly, I'm largely disappointed with the rest. But anyways, that's part of my background, part of how I got to be here today. I finished the PhD program somewhat disillusioned, somewhat disappointed in my intellectual elders, and also mad at myself for trusting a system that there's no reason to trust, you know, for believing that you get a college degree, you get a graduate degree, you're going to do better in life, you're going to make more money. Now that wasn't my motivation. Honestly, I was motivated by a true desire to contribute to knowledge and to learn as much as I could. But I did also expect that I would be able to continue to do so and to make a living doing so. I didn't realize I was going to come up against such a huge barrier built on class. And there's a ton that I can and will go into there, because I think it's a story that needs to be told. And I think that things need to change. The universities shouldn't be so old-fashioned. They shouldn't be so conservative. They should be places where radicalism thrives. And I don't mean just politically left, because we have a huge problem with that as well. Among the so-called political left at UCSC, there were some of the worst people I've ever met in my life. I mean, true predatory fucks. True slimy, anti-humanist, self-important D-bags. I mean, the worst people I've ever known in my life were there, claiming to be warriors for the people. I mean, it is such a joke, such a laughing stock when you think about it, and it's so sad. I am so disappointed in that. And especially because I studied art and literature because I love art and literature. Not because I wanted to be political. And especially not because I wanted to be a political asshole so out of touch with the common man that I fucking didn't have a clue what I was doing. Which is what is happening. Zero respect for the professors up at UCSC. They treat the people of Santa Cruz with so little esteem and such disregard that it's just, it really is a relationship that has no back and forth. It's a dominance type of relationship. It's a slave-master relationship, and it's sickening. Those people should be ashamed of themselves. They should. But they're not. Because they think they're better. You know, and because I was in that environment for so long, I know that there's a lot that I have to undo in myself, that I had taken on some of those traits just to survive within that system. And I don't want to judge the individual people, spineless and cowardly though they may be. I mean, you know, that's just part of the whole story. We don't need everyone to be courageous, but the thing is, when we have a place where the life of the mind is allowed, where the life of the mind is supported, it's very, very sad to see the people who are the beneficiaries of a system like that use it for no good purpose for the general public. And I mean, they argue about that back and forth all day. Oh, the political efficacy of your theory doesn't do this and doesn't do that. But honestly, they're all blowing smoke. And it's all super annoying when you see how they treat the people in the same town that they live in. Their attitude towards the town is disgusting. So I guess I do have a lot of judgment towards the way that they act and how they become as people. And I'm sure there's reasons for that. I mean, they're not from Santa Cruz. They don't understand Santa Cruz. So how could they possibly know that they're surrounded by great people, people of courage and goodwill, people of intelligence and innovation, people of creativity and beauty, people of physical strength and endurance. The people of Santa Cruz are as great as people anywhere in the world. And that's the point, is that people anywhere in the world are great. And when you are a servant, a public servant, a teacher, a professor, you would think you would have a baseline of respect for the people who you are being paid to serve. But it's not the case. Now, why they're so unhappy and why they're chasing their tails in this ridiculous, pedantic ritual, that is a tougher question. That has to do with class. That has to do with their backgrounds. That has to do with their parents. That has to do with their family. That has to do with who they have become as people. And I'm not going to write them off. Some of those people are good people too. I'm not saying they're not. I'm just saying the way they treat people in the town in which they live and make their living is deplorable. They're not deplorable, but the way they treat people is. Hope that makes sense. But anyways, leaving the university, leaving academia, starting my own business, doing photography and marketing, using social media as a tool to promote businesses and ideas that I support and that support me, has been a bigger education than my entire time in graduate school. No question, because I've had to learn it on my own. I've had to be resourceful by myself, and I've had to take chances that I'm quite sure would make 99% of those professors void their bladders, if only that. You know, this education, learning, isn't just about books. It's about your spirit. It's about who you are. It's about what you do. It's about how you face the world. So the trial by fire that I've been going through and continue to go through has been more productive for growth for me than all of that schooling. Though that schooling did do a lot of very positive things for me in terms of developing my own sense of self-discipline, giving me the ability to take on tasks that are very rigorous, require lots of work and consistency without people checking on me at all times. I'm incredibly grateful for my opportunity. All the things I learned, all the books I read, all the people I met. It was truly great. I guess in the end, I just felt that if we don't take those things that we learn, the value that we produce, and we don't share it with the public, then what are you doing? You're just creating a different class. And that, to me, is sickening, especially because it's the group of people who are talking about the problems of class that are isolating themselves and making themselves a different class and trying to climb up the ladder and competing about who's traveling more, who's getting more fellowships, who's getting better grants, and all of this bullshit. Nobody's competing with who helped more people at the local community college, who contributed to thinking about the homeless problem, who started an organic farm nonprofit. If people were competing about that, it would be a whole different world. But no. They're competing about their petty little bullshit rivalries of who got to spend what time in this library. It's sickening. They just want to be rich. They want to travel the world. And they're using research as a fucking excuse. And that, to me, is sickening. I do judge that because it's taking this thing that should be for the people and saying that it is in the name of the people and stealing it for your own greedy fucking selves. Fuck you. Fuck you. That's dirty. That's low. That's fucking... ugh. So yeah, I don't want anything to do with those people. I want nothing to do with those people. But I do want to take those things that I learned in graduate school and the discipline that I developed, and I want to use them to populate the world around me with intriguing ideas. Right? I want to see if I can get people engaged in some of these ideas and treat people with respect until they prove otherwise. You know, I give everyone a fair chance, and I expect the best of people. I expect the best of systems. I expect the best of structures. I lead with a very generous heart. That's partly why I went into that program thinking that it would be something good to do, and why it was so bitterly disappointing when I realized these people do not care. They seek violence in the name of the people that they cannot stand to be around. They want violent revolution. They want protest. They want to fight the so-called structures of power on behalf of a group of people who they cannot stand. It's the most backwards, ridiculous thing I've ever encountered. So I'm going to have to talk about it. I have to get that off my chest. And that has to change. We don't want our kids to grow up and become assholes if they go to college. And if they don't go to college, then what the fuck? That is something that needs to change. I mean, we need major educational reform throughout all levels of the educational system. But I just, most recently, out of the realm of higher education, so that's the one I know best. I don't really know what's happening in the elementary schools and the high schools as much today. But anyways, the concept of the dialogic is one of the things that I did really take away from that program and think is a valuable way to look at and to think about culture. There's a incredible organic quality to how culture develops and how it unfolds in time. Language is constantly changing. People are innovating, bending, twisting, subverting. And again, these pompous old fucks think that they are the gatekeepers to what is correct, and they don't even see people are using these different forms of language in a consistent way. That's what language is. They're creating meaning. Just because it doesn't use the pronunciation or the punctuation or the spelling that you say is right doesn't mean it doesn't communicate effectively what they're trying to say. This is the trap that I'm in, because how do I say they're wrong about claiming to be right without me falling into the same position where I'm saying what's right or wrong? And that's not really what I want to do. But I guess I have some feelings about that that I have to get off of my chest. But anyways, there's so much more to this story than my intellectual background, where I'm coming from. And I don't know if that's going to endear you to me or not, but I just want to be honest and I want to explain where I'm coming from so that if you do decide to tune in each week and you do want to follow me on this journey, I won't be deceiving you. I won't be luring you in with, oh, I got a PhD in literature, I got a bachelor's of fine art in painting, when honestly, that is not why you should be paying attention to me. You should pay attention to me because I care about our culture, because I'm thoughtful, because I'm creative, because occasionally I can be funny, and because you want to learn and grow too. And so I'm going to do just solo podcasts for a while until I really get used to this format, until I really have a sense of what it takes to say what I want to say. And then I will start to interview people. But I don't, every time, now this is where the name comes into play quite well, because when in dialogue, you change. I'm going to speak to people differently. I'm always going to be myself. And as you follow me and you listen to me, you're going to know where I come from and how true to myself I'm being when I'm interviewing other people, because you will have heard enough of me to know. But I want to build that up. I want to earn that trust. I want you to know where I'm coming from and why. So this really is the beginning of a journey of learning. First, it's about expressing my point of view so that you can learn who I am, so that you can trust me if you decide to, so that you can follow me on this path of exploration. And then together we're going to jump into some topics that will be relevant to the way we live today. And how that all connects to what's happening in politics right now, what's happening in the world at large with digital media. You know, it's like I'm a multimedia artist, and I see that as being kind of similar to mixed martial arts, let's say that. You know, in the UFC, Ultimate Fighting Championship, you have people who are trained in various disciplines. And as a result, they have different techniques and different approaches to the conflict at hand. And I feel the same, that my background in painting and drawing, in writing, in photography, and in video, all give me different ways to approach the project at hand. Whatever it is I'm trying to do, there are different ways of attacking it. So that's also what I'm going to be talking about, is how to develop yourself in multimedia, what kind of training you should do, what resources I trust, how to track your progress, how to create business, how to market yourself, how to market other people, how to create engaging content. And so if you are interested in literature, art, photography, politics, you're going to want to go ahead and give me a listen. I'm not going to ask you for anything. I'm going to try to be less annoying than I could be. I'm going to try and minimize whatever might be annoying. I want this to be of service to you. I want you to feel when you put on this podcast that I'm here for you, that I've been up the mountain, that I've sat at the table, and that instead of turning my back, I came back down to where my people were so I could share my thoughts and my stories with you. I hope you'll find them valuable. I hope you'll share with your friends. I hope it will inspire you to take on some of these tasks yourself, of researching, of digging deeper, of developing the craft. And together, we'll all get a little deeper into this whole thing called digital media, the digital age, contemporary life. Okay, that's it for now. Also going to be weighing in about different podcasts. It's going to be a bit of a meta podcast, because I love listening to podcasts, and I would love for you to be able to benefit from me turning you on to various podcasts. Okay, that's it for now. This is Jake J. Thomas signing out for the Dialogic Podcast. Peace.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.